This is the Big E Sports Show
on the Sports Map Radio Network.
From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Elissa Walker Campbell.
Hey, Elissa Walker Campbell, welcome in to our Super Bowl 58 coverage as it does continue here at Sports Map Radio Network. And we get you ready for one final showdown in Las Vegas at Allegiant Stadium. We are thrilled to welcome in for the first time. He is the co-host of Rock and Manouk in Phoenix, Arizona. And that is Dan Minucci, former Buffalo Bills quarterback and current quarterback coach, here to discuss his coaching and mentorship of the 49ers, Brock Purdy. Thank you for joining us, Dan.
Listen, I'm just getting chills as you're doing that intro as kickoff is, I don't know what, 24 hours away, if you will. And when you say Brock Purdy in the Super Bowl, starting quarterback for the San Francisco 49ers, I still kind of pinch myself because this young man has come so far and done just an outstanding job, as you can well attest, in high school, training him since basically ninth grade, and then in the college at Iowa State, and then getting him ready to go to San Francisco for the 49ers. For me, it's just surreal. I could not be more proud of one of the finest young men, Alyssa, you'll ever meet. Not only is he an outstanding quarterback, he's one of the finest, most humble, polite individuals you will ever meet.
Well, and Dan, this Super Bowl, for you personally and professionally, it's got a different feel because as you were just highlighting and talking about, I mean, you've been working with Brock Purdy since he was a freshman at Perry High School in Gilbert, Arizona. So what is, I mean, I can hear it in your voice, but just overall, your level of excitement for Brock Purdy's first Super Bowl?
Well, number one, just for him to, you know, we expect him to make the team. You know, he gets drafted Mr. Irrelevant. And quite frankly, I think he got underdrafted. I fear he might be a third, fourth, fifth rounder at the most. And I think that what John Lynch saw in him was all the games he played at Iowa State. Listen, he played 46 games for Iowa State. So he's got that savvy about him. He's got that confidence about him. He's not cocky. But we are beyond excited for Brock Purdy just because he's just such a hardworking guy. He's a very focused individual. And one of the things that people always ask is, did you see something in him at an early age? And how can you tell if a guy's going to make the National Football League? But I did see a lot of consistency, a lot of hard work. We saw a young man that was very diligent at what he did each and every day. And the way he went about his business, very mature young man. And like I tell a lot of people, he's kind of an old soul. You know, he's 24 going on 55, because he sees what he wants, he goes and gets what he wants, but he understands what it takes to get there. And more importantly, what I told him before I went to camp a year ago, training camp, I said, learn that playbook inside and out, do anything and everything they ask you to do, but just be you, be confident, you got the game, you got the ability, just go out there and do your thing. And the one thing about Brock Purdy, Alyssa, is that he's outstanding in reference to being patient. But he's very athletic, and he's not afraid to pull the trigger. He's not afraid to go out and win, and that's the kind of confidence that you see in Brock Purdy.
Well, Brock Purdy, when I think of him, just his self-belief, his swagger, his confidence. But we got to talk about the fact, you'd mentioned humility. He is a team-first guy.
Totally. And you know what? He gives thanks and praise to those guys, and he, you know, feels very fortunate. And you bring up something, the confidence. It's not cocky. He's just very confident.
Right, self-assured.
He understands what he has. And I think a lot of it is, you know, he's very, very faith-based, very solid Christian man that realizes, look, the world doesn't rotate around football. You know, he's in a situation where he understands what he has to do and when he has to do it. And when you see, he understands all of the weapons around him. But Brock also is a young man that ignores the noise, if you will, the whole game manager situation, especially for a young man that ended up fourth in the MVP voting. So he's always taken that humility, that confidence, but he gives all the credit to his coaches, to his teammates. And when you have a guy like Kyle Shanahan as your head coach, and then Brian Griese, who's his quarterback coach, he realizes how very, very fortunate he is, but he just takes that to another level and never, Alyssa, takes it for granted.
He is an NFL alum with the Buffalo Bills, played college ball at K-State. Quarterback coach Dan Minucci, our very special guest to kick off our program at Sports Map Radio Network. And one thing I'll say, Dan, is that you always learn a lot about somebody and just how they navigate adversity. Just weigh in and provide your thoughts on how he responded when we talk about Brock Purdy to that three-game losing skid, how he kept the team together, and they were able to flip the script.
You know, he just kept the focus. I mean, I texted him a couple times, and he just said, hey, look, we're good.
Mm-hmm.
They just had a couple shortfalls. But I think where you see a quarterback or a team grow and not go through a streak like that, this team really grew through that. They made some adjustments. Brock realized, and you'll love this, he realized that a lot of it was him. And he put that onus on himself that he had to get better, that he had to make sure his team came out of the funk, if you will. So not many guys, he never points fingers. It's always, what can I do to get better? What can I do to make this team better? And Alyssa, he's always been that way. You know, if there's adversity, there's challenges, he meets them head on. And he puts the onus on himself on how he can get that team out of a funk, eat that team better down the road. And that's just the way a leader is. And the humility is that locker room saw how he was working his butt off to get him back on track during the middle of that three-game losing streak.
Take us back to those early days. I mean, how did you help him prepare for what he would be experiencing at the highest level and as a pro? Because he has overcome so much and proven time and time again to be the perfect fit for the 49ers and for this system.
You know, listen, I pushed him hard, and he never wavered. I mean, I throw a lot of, I call mental gymnastics at guys while we're training.
Mm-hmm.
They got to think, they got to react while they're somewhat gassed. I call it cardio quarterbacking, where they got to move, they got to do the drill, and I'll throw three or four mental things at him where he's got to decide, see it, make it happen. And we'll be out there, it's 105, 110 degrees, and he's gassed. And he always accepted the challenge. He always figured that, hey, look, this is going to help me get through two-minute offenses, whether it be at Iowa State or in San Francisco. But the one thing, he always accepted that. He always said, how can I get better? How can I get through this drill when he's dead dog tired? And not wanting to take a break, he would always go, let's do it again, let's do it again. So in preparing guys mentally, physically, and emotionally, and I throw a lot of, I call big boy drills at him early on. From ninth grade to 10th, all the way through, and just said, look, you got to get this down if you want to get better. Because here's the thing, you're either getting better or you're backing up. But you know what, Alyssa? He always, always took that next step up and never wavered. He never questioned me because he goes, you know, coach, you've been to the mountaintop. You know it's on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
So he's very like, he's like, you know, he's like a sponge. What do you have? What do you have? What else you got? And that's the thing I think about Brock, is how he never wavered through some of those drills. And like I tell you, you know, it ain't recess out there, Alyssa. We're out there working, man. We're getting after it.
Uh-huh, yeah. And you have played at the highest level, so I got to ask you, how did you prepare him for the speed of the game?
You know, it's interesting you bring that up because we would do a lot of things, and I talk about, Brock, the speed's going to be quicker.
Yep.
Get the ball out quicker.
Mm-hmm.
You got to put the ball here. You got to put the ball there. I said, you've been doing it at, you know, third and fourth gear for a long time. You need to go to a sixth gear in order to get you ready. So we did a lot of – we just amped everything up, Alyssa. Quicker drops. Get the ball out quicker. And I would put that onus on him, and then we would do what I call rapid-fire drills, where he'd get the ball, take a drop, bang, get it out. Get the ball, take a drop, bang, get it out. And we did a lot of stuff where I pushed him. And it's not only pushing him physically, but it's pushing him mentally. And I got to tell you what, right before he went to minicamp 2 years ago, his first minicamp, he was on it, man. He was nailing it. The ball never hit the ground. He was accurate. He was on it. He was quick, and he understood that you got to go to a fifth or sixth gear at that next level. So a lot of guys don't train that way. I mean, the higher you go, we're looking to progress and not regress, and he totally accepted that. And I got to tell you, Alyssa, I sure there's a lot of people, I could see that accuracy, that speed, that tempo before he got to training camp. And lo and behold, my last thing I said, learn that playbook, inside, outside, backwards, forward. Learn it in Chinese, learn it in Greek, learn it in Italian, whatever you got to do, man.
Yeah.
Learn that bad boy and be, and you, I said, you got the physical capabilities. Now go get the mental side of that game down.
Hey, it is Rapid Fire Drill with Dan Minucci, co-host of Rock and Minucci, of course, on Fox Sports 910 in Phoenix, Arizona. NFL alum with the Buffalo Bills. We're talking about his student, and that, of course, is Brock Purdy. And I got to ask you the glaring question, like, why did teams overlook him?
You know what? I think they looked too much at his size. You know, he's pushing. He's 6'1", Alyssa. He's pushing about 215. I don't think they really studied his film, quite honestly. I didn't think they did their homework on him. They go, well, he's not real big. He's big enough. Doesn't have a great arm. He's got a good arm. But they don't look at the intangibles.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this young man was the MVP of the Fiesta Bowl against Oregon during that COVID year. And look at all the records he broke. Look at all the things. Look at how many games he played. So I think a lot of scouts, in my opinion, Alyssa, get too tied up in tangibles versus looking at the intangibles that we see with Brock Purdy. Escapability, athleticism, throwing on the run, ability to think, ability to recover after mistake. So I just think that John Lynch, the general manager of the 49ers, he saw all that. I mean, he saw all the benefits of playing so much and realizing you don't have to throw a football through a car wash and it not get wet. You can throw a football and put it on the money. And I got to tell you what, I've seen a lot of quarterbacks with $100 arms but with $10 brains, if you know what I'm talking
yeah.
about.
Mm-hmm.
And he can see it. He can make it happen. Alyssa, you're getting me fired up. I'm about ready to hit somebody right now.
Good stuff. Hey, he is the co-host of Rock and Manoog. Dan Minucci has been our very special guest, Sports Map Radio Network. What a great way to get you ready for Super Bowl 58. Enjoy the big game. Congratulations. Continued success. And we look forward to connecting once again in 2024. Thank you, Dan.
Oh, listen, my pleasure. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. And go Niners.
All right.
Go bang, bang, Niners.
Hey, stick around. Much more coming your way. The fastest 2 hours in radio. Sports Map Radio Network. We will be right back after this quick break.
You're listening to the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the Sports Map Radio studios, here's Elissa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, Elissa Walker-Campbell, welcome back. Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show, being powered by our good friends at Progressive Insurance. Perhaps you're looking for a career path with flexibility, great pay, and benefits. Go to progressive.com/careers and apply online today. Well, the countdown is officially on for the NFL's first Super Bowl in Las Vegas, and it has plenty of fascinating storylines leading up to the big game. You never know who's going to drop by our show. We are so excited to welcome our next guest. That is Dallas Cowboy great Daryl Moose Johnston. Here to share some exciting news about his new position as the Executive Vice President of Football Operations with UFL and also to weigh in on Super Bowl 58. Thank you for joining us, Daryl.
My pleasure. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great. We are super excited for the big game. It is almost here. And let's take a look back because you know what it takes to win at the highest level. You are a 3-time Super Bowl winner with my Dallas Cowboys. Take us back to those playing days. And what was it like the night before the Super Bowl for you as a player? I mean, you've got that adrenaline, so much anticipation. How did you manage your emotions?
Yeah, it was actually easier than I thought it was going to be, especially that first time around, you know, kind of fulfilling that childhood dream and being in that moment. And I give the credit to Jimmy Johnson and our staff. I think they did a really good job of keeping it as normal a practice week leading up to the Super Bowl as they possibly could. Obviously, you're in the host city and you've got obligations and you're on, you know, media row in the morning and, you know, trying to maintain that structure of practice that you've had all season long. And it is challenging, but they did a great job. And they really kind of kept us in that comfort zone. And I think with us being a first-time team being there, and that first Super Bowl, we were the youngest team in the NFL when you look at the age of our roster, and Buffalo was in their third consecutive Super Bowl. I think that there was an excitement about us being there and the emotion that we took the field with that was very different than Buffalo, and I think it actually helped us out during the course of the game.
You know, Daryl, I always wondered, how do players handle the day before the Super Bowl? Because as you just mentioned, I mean, you're one step closer to realizing the ultimate dream and what you have been working for your entire life, and somehow you've got to center yourself, you've got to compartmentalize, and you got to get your mind and your body quiet because you don't want to be tossing and turning the night before, and it could become the most stressful night of your life.
Exactly. And I think that's why, you know, maintaining that routine. I think that you know, players are such creatures of habit. And if you can create that routine and that structure for us, we can maintain everything and kind of manage, you know, how our emotions are going to impact us. And one of the crazy things was I grew up, I was a huge Andy Griffith fan.
Oh, yeah.
And there was always an Andy Griffith marathon. There was always an Andy Griffith marathon on Super Bowl Sunday morning. So I'd be sitting in the hotel watching Andy Griffith the day before the big kickoff.
Hey, I'm not going to put you on the spot and make you whistle, though, Daryl. Okay.
That's easy.
Yeah. Hey, three-time Super Bowl winner with the Cowboys. Okay, there you go. Nice. Hey, Daryl Moose Johnston is with us, and we're looking so forward to the big showdown with the Chiefs and the 49ers. As I just mentioned, you've won three Super Bowls with the Cowboys in 93, 94, and 96. Enjoyed an 11-year NFL career. Just take time to share with our audience just some of your favorite Super Bowl memories, and what stands out? What comes to your mind, Daryl?
Well, I think the first Super Bowl that we were in, that we just talked about, people forget, you know, the end of the game that was 52-17. But the way that game started out, you know, we had a punt block and Buffalo went up on us right away, 7-0. You know, so that was really impressive for our group to kind of maintain our composure and not get flustered. And, you know, Buffalo had been there, as we said, three consecutive years now. And you would think that they would be the team that would be able to handle a lot of the stuff that comes along with the Super Bowl. But they continued to turn the ball over. That the game really got away from them. But one of the things that's kind of under the radar in that game that never really got a lot of play is the field was very slick, and heard a number of reasons why, you know, something may have happened. But everybody says when you're at the Rose Bowl, as you get to that dusk time, that the dew point or whatever goes on from a natural standpoint, it just, you get a little slickness on that field. And if you go back and watch some of that tape, you'll catch our sideline changing our cleats. We went from half-inch screw-in cleats to three-quarter screw-in cleats. And you'll notice that our traction was much better moving forward. You won't see as many slips by our players. So that was one of those hidden gems that, you know, our equipment guys, it was like a NASCAR pit row, you know, just guys coming off the field and, you know, they've got the gun out and changing shoes and getting different things in that are going to work better for the field conditions that day. So that was a big thing there. They all have their little quirkiness to them. Super Bowl, the second one we played in 28, you know, we fell behind at halftime. It was 13-6 at halftime. And I still think that was probably some of the best coaching that Jimmy Johnson ever did, because we're very frustrated. Buffalo played a really good half against us defensively and really had our offense out of sync. And as we came in at halftime, you know, Jimmy stood outside our locker room and said, hey, they're doing something different. We got it sorted out. We got a play that we're going to run. We haven't run it in about a month. So, you know, you guys go take care of your business, get down, get in front of the board, and we're going to go through and make sure everybody's good with assignments. And we made that correction. And if you remember, in the second half, we came out on our first possession, and it was the same play. Emmett right, Emmett left, Emmett right, Emmett left, all the way down the field. And Buffalo never adjusted to the adjustment that we had made at halftime. And so we were able to kind of just take that second half over. And the second half score was 24-0 and ended up winning our second Super Bowl back-to-back. So that was great, you know, just the adjustments and the coaching at halftime. And not panicking, understanding that the Bills were playing well, doing something different, but we've got a solution for you. And then the third one, you know, that was... to win three Super Bowls in 4 years, and nobody had done that before. And, you know, Pittsburgh, you know, it was a very similar game. It was a game that we got off to a great start. And then they started to come back. They converted the onside kick, and, you know, all the momentum was going their way. And then Larry Brown steps up and makes a huge play for us. And, you know, I think that was the great thing about that team, is how we complemented each other. If one side of the football was struggling a little bit, the other side lifted it up and held down the fort until they got, you know, back into a rhythm. And there were times in all three of our Super Bowls when that happened. And as I always say, those were not, you know, teams with a great offense or a great defense. Those are just great teams. And your great teams are usually the ones that come out on top of the Super Bowl.
Hey, we are so glad you're with us on this Saturday afternoon. Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. I'm your host, Elissa Walker-Campbell. Always love to connect with our national audience live on X or Twitter at E Radio Sports. You can email the show info@eradiosports.com, twice as nice, podcastarena.com. An exclusive interview with one of our favorites, Daryl Moose Johnston, three-time Super Bowl winner. Reliving those memories, those epic battles with Buffalo and Pittsburgh, but we want you to weigh in on, what about those historic rivalry between the Cowboys and the 49ers? What do you remember, Daryl?
Oh my gosh, just it always seemed like there was something at stake, something really big at stake when we played San Francisco. And that comes, you know, with the championship games that we competed against each other in. I mean, it goes all the way back, you know, prior to our time being in Dallas with the catch with Joe Montana and Dwight Clark. So there were always huge moments in that Dallas-San Francisco rivalry. because there was always, you know, huge ramifications. A lot of times it was the right to go to the Super Bowl. But even when we played in the regular season, it always seemed like it was a tipping point, you know, that was going to, you know, propel one of the teams, the winner of that game, you know, into control of the NFC East or the NFC at the time. So, you know, those rivalries are fantastic. I still think the best game that our team in 92 ever played, that group together ever played, was the championship game at Candlestick to beat San Francisco.
Oh, yeah.
To go to our first Super Bowl. I mean, just an unbelievably talented team. And people forget, we won that game. We were plus four in the turnover ratio.
Yeah.
And we were holding on at the end of the game to win that game. I mean, that's how good San Francisco was at that time. And I think people looked at us as an up-and-coming team, but they didn't think we were quite ready yet to be able to go to Candlestick and beat the 49ers. And it took the best game that group ever played to win that. And that was kind of one of the huge things there. And I do think that the Charles Haley trade to the Dallas Cowboys shifted the power in the NFC. You know, when we got Charles, you know, that was kind of the missing piece for our defense. You know, somebody that the offensive coordinators had to account for. You know, Charles will take over a game with his ability to rush the passer. And that really tipped the power in the NFC back to Dallas at that time.
Hey, you're listening to The Voice. Daryl Moose Johnston, our very special guest at Sports Map Radio, reliving so many amazing memories. But we want your MVP perspective. Come on, Daryl. Talk to us about the state of the Cowboys. They are coming off perhaps their worst playoff loss in franchise history. So who is the most to blame for the Cowboys' early exit? And are you surprised that nothing changed this past season?
You know, I don't think there's any one individual or any one component of the team to shoulder all the blame for a poor performance. I think you win as a team and you lose as a team. And that was definitely a team loss. Unfortunately, they were not good in any phase. Special teams was not good. Offense wasn't good. Defense wasn't good. We had seen Green Bay, you know, towards the end of the season, and you saw that team starting to come together. You saw Jordan Love starting to grow and mature, but I did not expect that team to play that well. I think it was a shock for everybody. Everybody in Dallas talked about the way that Green Bay had kind of controlled those playoff games against Dallas. But, you know, that was the Mike McCarthy Packers, and that was Aaron Rodgers at quarterback. This is a whole different scenario. And yet here they come into Dallas and probably the most convincing playoff victory of all of them. And so it was a terrible performance. If you're going to win important games, your best players have to play their best football in the biggest moments. And Dak Prescott did not play well. And Micah Parsons did not play well. And CeeDee Lamb did not play well. You know, that's what happens when your star players don't rise to the occasion in that moment. And I don't think anybody anticipated that happening. I think going into the game, you heard, you know, a lot of positives about a good week of preparation. I just think they were completely blindsided by that. And I think it was so bad of a performance. It's been really, really hard even to go back and watch it again and try and find out exactly what happened during the course of that game. And when you watch it, it's the worst brand of football that Dallas played all season long in a divisional playoff.
Our Super Bowl 58 coverage continues with Daryl Moose Johnston after this quick timeout.
You're listening to the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the Sports Map Radio studios, here's Elissa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, welcome back. Hour 1, Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. Right now, let's rejoin our interview with Daryl Johnston. How should the Cowboys attack the offseason?
Well, they've got a lot of big decisions to make. They've got to be forward-thinking. Mm-hmm. You're going to have a transition with Dan Quinn leaving and going to the Washington Commanders to be head coach. You know, how do you transition the defensive personnel into Mike Zimmer style? You know, they're very different in how they structure and build their defense. So I think it's going to be interesting to see, you know, where they focus on bringing players in that maybe are not on the roster right now that need to be a part of that to play Mike Zimmer's defense effectively. I think one of the big things in Mike's defense that is something that Dan Quinn was able to navigate in a different way is kind of that stack linebacker. You know, it's something that's essential in Mike Zimmer's defense. And you saw Dan Quinn utilize kind of that hybrid safety linebacker style because the game is played, you know, on the perimeter so much, and there's an emphasis on speed and coverage ability. So I think there's a philosophical transition that the defense is going to have to go through, and they're going to have to probably rework a little bit of the personnel on the defensive side. And then they've got some big contracts coming down the road, and you've got to start preparing yourself to sign Micah Parsons long term, to sign CeeDee Lamb long term. You've got a big decision to make on Dak Prescott, which is probably going to be really the key moving forward. How do you keep Dak Prescott as your quarterback? And then it's up to Dak Prescott which path are you going to go down? You know, it's very similar to where Tony Romo was. You know, Tony Romo was outstanding during the course of the regular season, but he struggled when he got into the playoffs. And you know, there are two quarterbacks in this franchise. When you talk about the Dallas Cowboys, it's Roger Staubach and it's Troy Aikman. Yeah. And you're going to be held to that standard. And that happens in the playoffs, in winning championships. And so they've got a big decision to make. And Dak Prescott, the guy that we're hitching the wagon to and moving forward. And is he going to be able to take that next step and move towards the Troy Aikman and the Roger Staubach component of the franchise when you talk about a legacy? So, I mean, there are huge, huge decisions that Dallas has to make. And there's some really interesting work that they're going to have to do as they transition to the style of defense that Mike Zimmer is going to want to play.
You know, I was going to ask you about that as far as what is your reaction to Mike Zimmer coming on board and how big of a difference can he immediately make?
Great defensive mind. I mean, a really great defensive mind. When a guy like Deion Sanders says that Mike Zimmer was one of the best coaches, or if not the best coach he's ever played for, you know, that's a guy who's a teacher. And those are critical, right? If a guy like Deion, who's so talented, which is blessed with a, you know, natural athleticism, and then you get a guy who's a really good teacher and brings you kind of inside the X's and O's and how to play the position and lengthen your career and maximize what you do. Because as your physical abilities start to wane a little bit at the end of your career, you know, if you've got that savvy and that knowledge, and the mental side of the game can extend your career. You know, I think that's what Mike Zimmer was able to do for Deion. So you know that he's a very good teacher. You look at the defenses that he had when he was in Cincinnati, when he was in Minnesota. You know, everywhere Mike Zimmer's been, that defense has been stout, and it's been, you know, probably the stronger side of the ball when you talk about the offense and the defensive components of the team. So I'm very interested, you know, to see, you know, what he does, and it's a very different culture. You know, the personality of Dan Quinn, the brotherhood, everything that he brings, you see the joy and the celebration and everything with Dan and his players. You know, Mike's a little bit more of a taskmaster. It's going to be a little bit more, you know, strict and disciplined in what you're doing. So there's going to be quite a few adjustments, you know, that the players will make and the coaches will make as they go through this transition and get used to the culture, not just the scheme, but also the culture that Mike Zimmer is going to bring to the organization.
Hey, we are wrapping up our time. Daryl Moose Johnson, our very special guest, Sports Map Radio Network, 3-time Super Bowl winner, and we got to congratulate you. We want to hear a little bit about your new responsibilities and positions, the Vice President of Football Operations with the UFL. So what can we look forward to? Talk to us, Daryl.
Yeah, well, you know, we've all been waiting to see what was going to happen with spring football since, you know, the AAF started back in 2018, 2019, and we're bringing back that spring football component, and nobody just seems to have been able to find the sustainability. The AAF didn't make it. The XFL in their first go-around in 2020 didn't make it. And then, you know, I was part of the USFL when we came up, and, you know, we were able to finish our second season last year and crown our Birmingham Stallions as back-to-back champions. Uh-huh. The XFL was able to finish their season and crown the Arlington Renegades as their champion. So now everybody's like, okay, we've been waiting for one team or one league to be able to make it through. Now we've got two. So what's going to happen moving forward? And I think that this was really the logical decision. It's very hard for one individual league to sustain itself, you know, during the course of the spring and the talent that's out there. It makes sense for us to come together and merge. And so the biggest thing for us with this opportunity is to make sure that 1+1 doesn't equal 2, to make sure that 1+1 equals like 3.5. You know, we've got an opportunity now to bring all the players that didn't make it as part of the merger that were on the teams that didn't make it into the UFL and get those guys onto our rosters. So you're talking about the most talented spring league that is going to put a product on the field in quite some time. And I think that's what excites everybody. We've got great coaches. We've got great support staffs. When you talk about all the different elements that go into not just a team, but a league, and our video department, our athletic training department, our strength and performance department, is outstanding, you know, to help our players with anything that they need, to continue chasing that dream. So I think everybody inside the UFL is extremely excited about the potential that we have. And the hardest part about this whole transition is we couldn't bring everybody with us. And it was hard to say goodbye to a lot of great people that helped us build both the USFL and the XFL to the point where this merger made sense. But keeping the great people that we have now together and allowing them to build this on a really, really strong foundation. I mean, we are so excited because we feel we're poised to be able to create a league that's going to be able to be sustainable and be around for decades to come. And to provide these players an alternative route to get back to the NFL and to continue to chase that dream. You know, we've seen you know, through the draft process, and then you put the pandemic in with that in 2020. There's so many players that get lost in the shuffle. And this gives them an opportunity to get back into a league, to get some film, to get back on the NFL radar from an evaluation and a scouting standpoint. So, you know, it's an honor for us to be able to provide an opportunity for these guys, not only to get back to the NFL, but to get back to the NFL and stay and have a 2-year career, a 3-year career, a 4-year career, really change the trajectory of their life. Because those NFL contracts are life-changing for these young men.
Well, and as I understand, the season gets underway, what, next month? Games will start, what, March 30th? Is that right?
March 30th, yeah. Kickoff is 1 o'clock on Fox. March 30th, we've got the USFL champion, back-to-back champion, Birmingham Stallions, going up against the XFL champion, Arlington Renegades. Great way to start this season, having the two champions from the different leagues come together in week one. And there's always going to be a little bit of friendly competition between the two leagues. You know, we've got the USFL conference and we've got the XFL conference inside the United Football League. So, you know, when we have a USFL versus an XFL conference game, we're all going to be talking smack and bragging on our side.
Uh-huh.
And, so it's going to be a lot of fun. There's going to be, I can't wait for the kickoff. We've done some rule changes. We've blended everything. I mean, we've tried to take the best practices from both leagues and make sure that we put the best product on the field. So we're really excited to see what the response of our fan base is on opening weekend.
We don't want to let you get away. Final question for you. You got to weigh in on Super Bowl 58. And are you a bit surprised that the NFC champion, San Francisco 49ers, they are this year's favorites to win the Super Bowl?
I'm not, because I always felt during the course of the year, it would go back and forth, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, for a while there, they had that 3-game losing streak. But if you really kind of dig into that, we had them right after that losing streak for a game on Fox. And you go back and, you know, you look at the reasons why. Christian McCaffrey was not there. And you know, Trent Smith, you know, Trent was not there. And, you know, Trent Williams is banged up. And he's such a key component. When you talk about, you know, a cornerstone at left tackle. So there was reasons why San Francisco had that bump in the road. But I really felt that during the course of the season, that if San Francisco plays a clean football game, it's really hard to beat them. And the one loss they had down the stretch was against Baltimore when they had all the interceptions. So if you do that to any team, you're going to have a tough time winning a game. But there's no way you're going to do that against a Baltimore Ravens team. So I think that San Francisco consistently during the course of the year has been the best team. I think at the end of the year, we thought maybe it was Baltimore, and especially with the way that they beat San Francisco at the end. So now the fact that they're playing Kansas City, and Kansas City is a team, they also had a little bump in the road.
Oh, yeah.
In the middle of October, they were not playing good football.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, dropped footballs all over the place. You know, stuff outside of Patrick Mahomes' control. But they were able to right the ship, played some of their best football down the stretch, which is exactly what you want to do. And the question for Kansas City is, well, yeah, they've been great over the last few seasons, but they've always played at Arrowhead. What happens when they have to go on the road? I mean, that win in Buffalo and that win in Baltimore is going to be such a huge confidence boost for this team.
Right.
And it's so hard to bet against Patrick Mahomes. The last time these two teams played, San Francisco is up 10 points in the fourth quarter. That's how San Francisco wins. They usually close you out in that situation. And they allowed Kansas City to come back and win that game. So I think that this is going to be a great rematch. We've had great Super Bowls the last 3 to 5 years. I think this one is poised to be the best in the last 3 to 5 years. I think it could really come down to, does Brock Purdy have the football in his hand at the end of the game, or does Patrick Mahomes have the football in his hand at the end of the game to have that game-winning drive to steal a Super Bowl title?
He is simply the best 3-time Super Bowl winner, Daryl Moose Johnson, joining us here at Sports Map Radio Network. Enjoy the big game, and we look forward to another conversation in 2024. Thank you, Daryl.
You're welcome. Enjoy the game.
You bet. Stick around. Much more coming your way. The fastest 2 hours in radio. Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. We will be right back after this quick break.
You're listening to the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Elissa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, Elissa Walker-Campbell, welcome back. Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. And we are looking so forward to the NFL's biggest day of the year. We're officially on the clock, and the 2024 Super Bowl odds have the NFC champion, San Francisco 49ers, as this year's favorite. These two teams faced off in Super Bowl 54 with the Chiefs coming out victorious, and now the 49ers get a shot at revenge. Always look forward to our next guest because he knows exactly what it takes to win at the highest level. That is Super Bowl winning coach. He is a Pro Football Hall of Famer and a Big E favorite. Hello, Coach Vermeil.
Hey, good afternoon. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. Fired up for the big game. And let's lead off and talk about your former team with the Chiefs. And they ended the regular season with an 11-6 record, finally flipped the script and morphed back into that championship caliber team and started playing their best football of the season. And it is no secret, you know, the Chiefs have struggled during the early portion of the season. But how were they, Coach, able to flip the script and spark this run to try to make a back-to-back title run?
I think that really reflects Andy Reid and his coaching staff. You know, they just kept getting better, and he never panics or goes into a state of depression when they lose. He analyzes what happened in the loss, and he goes out and he corrects it. And the players trust him, just like they do. You know, Spagnuolo on the defensive side of the ball, you've read all week about how they trust the coaches. And I think that leads to maturing as you go through the adversity and coming out better teams. And here they are again in the Super Bowl.
You know, you talk about the coaching, but we got to keep it real. We got to talk about this Chiefs defense because it is the youngest in the NFL, and it really has powered Kansas City and put them in a position to repeat as Super Bowl champions. Give them some love.
Well, you know, I think it's a great reflection on the personnel department.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of young kids playing. That means they were drafted wisely, you know, and correctly, and they're performing well. Just think how they'll be next year.
Right.
Of course, free agency will start coming wrong soon, and you can't keep them all. They'll lose a few. But again, if you follow their profile, they'll draft well again somewhere in the future and keep the team going as it is.
Well, how good is this Kansas City defense? I mean, these guys, as we're talking about, they're young and they're fresh. They got fresh legs.
Yeah, you know, they are very good. They are very, very, very good. And their stats are so dominating, better than they were a year ago. But as you study them, they'll be challenged because they're up against the best offensive team in football right now. You know, normally we say the best offensive team in football, you're talking about the Chiefs. This time you're talking about the 49ers. And their offense ranks number 13. They have 13 number one rankings out of 52 variable stats that I study. That's outstanding performance on offense. So the Chiefs defense will have to be as good as they've been and better to win the football game.
Well, the 49ers are this year's favorite when we talk about the 2024 Super Bowl. But in my mind, Dick, I feel like the Chiefs have the competitive advantage psychologically because they are the defending champs and they have been in this situation before. They got to have a lot of confidence going in to Allegiant Stadium.
I think all players that are coached by Andy Reid and his staff go into games confident they can win and that they're well prepared. You know, I think it's going to come down to which team doesn't turn it over, which team takes it away,
mm-hmm.
that kind of thing, which team doesn't a receiver catch a ball and bounce out of his hands into another defender's hands and it becomes an interception, those kind of plays. Hopefully, it won't come down to a questionable call by an official. So many times these games that are so close, it comes down to that call, and it is reevaluated 600 times in the next 3 days, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But hopefully it won't. But right now, my computer reports spread over 17 games of performance by both teams picks the 49ers by a strong margin.
Mm.
That doesn't mean it's right, okay? They picked the 49ers wrong four times. They picked them four times to win and they lost. The Chiefs, it was picked, they were wrong four times, two times to win and they lost, and two times to lose and they won. So I don't know which computer report to go by, but my papers say that 49ers are going to win by 11. Uh-huh. I can't believe it.
He is a Pro Football Hall of Famer, Super Bowl winning coach, the great Dick Vermeil, with us at Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. And just a moment ago, you were talking about Andy Reid, and he is a very close friend. You guys have a wonderful relationship. And, of course, both of you coached the Eagles and the Chiefs. So just give us your thoughts on how much he has evolved, just the evolution of Andy Reid as a head coach, how creative he is offensively.
Well, you know, I think when you have the personality and the resiliency that Andy has within his personality, backed by his intelligence and ability to lead, all you do is get better. When you keep adding the number of years he's coached the offense himself as really the architect of the offense, all it does is keep getting better. And sometimes you lose players that were better than ones you're playing now, but the offense still performs well. You know, but, you know, he's up against another guy right now in Kyle Shanahan. You know, he is the next Andy Reid, okay? He is the next Mike Shanahan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's done a brilliant job within that offense scheme, and it's different than the Chiefs. You know, they do a great job of attacking the field and the defense horizontally, and then they condense all their formations and attack in different angles From inside out, and it's impressive. Plus, they run the hell out of the ball.
Hey, we're going to talk some more about Kyle Shanahan in just a second, but when we talk about Andy Reid, he is looking for his third Super Bowl title in the last 5 seasons. And so just how does his coaching career, how does it compare to, like, a Bill Belichick?
Well, you know, he hasn't coached as long, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And, he's been in 2 situations. And, you know, they were both different, but he was very successful in Philadelphia, you know. But and then Shanahan's career was different. Then he bounced around to many different teams, you know, starting out as a, you know, starting all the way back early days with John Gruden as a intern,
mm-hmm.
you know. So he's bounced around. But Shanahan, I think, is a younger Andy Reid, okay? Then maybe a little further along at the same number of years because of the experience he had with his dad and the experience he has and the contribution. I can't believe his dad isn't involved on a weekly basis.
Well, Kyle Shanahan, he really has done a remarkable job. I'm sure his dad is awfully proud. But what are the similarities or perhaps even differences between Kyle Shanahan and just how his dad executed as a coach?
Well, you know, that's hard to say. You know, that really is hard to put a defined answer to your question. You know, they both have coached different players with different quarterbacks,
right.
And they've adapted what the quarterback could do within their scheme. I think Andy Reid has enhanced the use of the tight end in the formations. I think Kyle Shanahan has enhanced the use of the running game and the running back and the play action pass off the running game a little bit more than Andy Reid has within his style of offense. And I think there's a difference, and it's and everything else are very similar. And they're bright, bright offensive coaches getting the ball in the hands of their skilled people.
Super Bowl 58, it is almost here. We are getting you ready for the big game. Our very special guest is Dick Vermeil, Pro Football Hall of Famer, Super Bowl winning coach. And let's talk some more about the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes. He is already a 2-time Super Bowl MVP. And if any player is going to challenge Tom Brady for being the GOAT, he has the best chance. Talk about just how much he has evolved over his time, you know, at Kansas City. I mean, in his 6 seasons, he's only 28 years old, and it feels like he has just begun. And just he has adapted to everything that's been presented to him.
Well, you know what I like about him now, and I've always liked him, how can you not like him as a former coach, is that he's matured in a way he's not quite the gambler that he was. He could end up being his own worst enemy from time to time because of his confidence and the flexibility and his ability and the way that he throws the ball and makes plays after the normal setup position and then gets out of there and throws it underhand, overhand, left hand,
uh-huh.
running right, all those kinds of things. I thought in the early stages of his career he took too many chances and therefore would backfire on him with interceptions and those kind of plays. I think he's cut way down on those. And I think the other people within the offensive scheme have played with him enough now and understand him enough that they respond positively as soon as the play, the initial design of the play breaks down and they go ahead and attack on the move. And I think that's what will win the game for him probably if they do win the game.
Hey, we talk about Patrick Mahomes. We got to give some love to Brock Purdy. Why is he the perfect fit for the 49ers and for that offense?
Well, I think he can do everything Kyle Shanahan asked him to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Brian Greasy is his quarterback coach who played for Mike Shanahan. So there's a history of the quarterback coach and working together. And I think they just fit him in nicely, you know, just like Mike March did with Kurt Warner out of the Arena League, you know. And every time they do something with him, they find out he can do more. And that's what they've done with this kid, you know. And he's remarkable. You know, he leads the league of passing. Can't be any better than number one.
Yeah.
Now what he has to do is win the big one and prove that he's worthy of all the accolades he's been given, you know. Because if they don't, they'll say, well, he was only a 7th-round pick. He's the last guy in the draft, and he's a program quarterback, you know. Alone, he's a winning quarterback. He's a winning quarterback and playing like one. And if he, what's the Chiefs' job is now to not allow him to play like one.
He's a legendary NFL Super Bowl winning coach, Pro Football Hall of Famer, simply the best. That is Dick Vermeil joining us and getting you ready for Super Bowl 58. The countdown is on. Enjoy the big game, coach, and we look forward to more conversations in 2024. You take care, okay?
Always great to be with you. So best to the two boys.
You
take
bet.
Care.
Stick around. Much more coming your way. Sports Map Radio Network. We will be right back.